welcome to episode 2 of a special podcast series on intergenerational wealth. I am Amelia Hamilton, Audience Development Executive at CityWire and your host. In our first episode, we took a broader look at the topic and explored the 5 pillars of intergenerational wealth. And now in episode 2, we will hone in on one specific area, that is gifting. So here to talk all things gifting with me, I have the pleasure of introducing Les Cameron, Head of Technical at M&G Wealth, and Lisa Davies, Financial Planner at Throgmorton Capital Management. So welcome to both of you. There is a lot to unwrap, pardon the pun, in terms of gifting with intergenerational wealth, and there's a lot of contrasting views on the matter. So to start with, I think let's talk about inheritance tax, specifically its impacts on families. So Les, I'd like to start with you and just ask, every other month there seems to be reports of record inheritance tax receipts. Why is that, and how does it affect families?
I think there's two kind of aspects to it. That there's potentially quite a high death rate because of COVID, so possibly seeing the receipts coming through, spiking them a little bit. I think fundamentally, we've seen at the budget, the Chancellor freezing the IHT free allowances for the next 5 years. That's a continuation of something that's been happening for the last decade or so. So we've had 10 years of the amount you can get IHT free being frozen, and over those 10 years, people's assets increase in value, especially property prices. So that's, I think that's fueling the increase in IHT receipts. It's affecting more and more families. About 4% of estates pay IHT. The average bill is around £200,000. So that's quite a lot of money not to go to your family out of your estate. So I think basically the frozen bans, and we'll probably talk a bit later, lack of planning.
How much do you think you've been able to save clients that they didn't expect that they might be able to?
Well, I can't put a finger on a specific amount. I have recommended some make capital payments to the children, which can be a potentially exempt transfer, which is probably going to save them some money over time. Hopefully they'll live out the 7 years. I think a common one at the moment is gifts from income, because younger families are perhaps struggling due to high inflation levels. So when you suggest that to older, you know, parents, grandparents and that kind of thing, they realise that they can actually help out by doing that, from their disposable income or excess income. So I have saved money, maybe a few £100,000, maybe more.
In terms of gifting, Lisa, when clients come to you, do they ever do so with the intention of gift giving, or is it a topic that you have to more convince them of the merit of?
Mostly it's convince them of the merit of that, yes. I mean, not many. You do get the odd one who comes along and say, can I gift this amount now, and what situation will that leave me in? But mostly it's having to coerce them into making gifts and getting the money out of their estate, yes.
Yeah, I think from the advisor I've spoken to, it's sort of an advisor-driven discussion more than anything else. And I think a research showed that as well. If the advisor doesn't bring it up, it might not come up.
Why do you think that is?
I think people just don't like thinking about their own mortality. Mm-hmm. And then if you've got a blended family, you know, there's some very difficult conversations about where my money's going to go. It's so easy for something so complicated to get, I'll do it next month. And then you die and it's too late and it's complicated and you wish you had a time machine to go and get organised in advance. I think it's just they don't always think about their own mortality.
That's very true, what Les says. Yeah, people ask, you know, they do fear talking about their own mortality. And it's, you know, I sometimes laugh and joke about it when I'm with clients and say, so I'm going to talk about death again. I feel like when you die or when you go into a care home, I'm the bringer of doom and gloom. But, it has to be done.
Yeah, and from a practical point of view, if you're organised for dying, it's a really traumatic time for the people that's left behind. So you could leave them a traumatic period and some really complicated stuff to organise. Yeah. Or you can get organised in advance and they can deal with getting over your death without having to deal with your affairs that you could have done whilst you were alive. Well,
that's exactly right again, Liz. And you see so many families fall out post-death. Yeah, because the will wasn't written correctly or wasn't written to their liking and that kind of things, and it's really, really sad.
Yeah, an advisor told me a couple of months ago that two brothers in one family had fallen out, and it was a large estate, but what they fell out over was the carriage clock that their dad had got when they retired or something. So post-death, families can get strange.
Yeah, it's an irrational time, isn't it, because of all of those emotions. So you want to try and be rational ahead of time to put those precautions in place. Yeah. Absolutely. And have you seen any life events that make people more responsive to the idea of gifting?
Often illness is, you know, if and then sometimes it's too late. By the time they've become ill and they realise, you know, they could be at the end or you know, they're not immortal. so they bring you in then, what can we do? And it's just often it's too late then to do anything to resolve the situation.
And I think the pandemic has made people realise something could happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I'm at death's door.
Yeah.
So they have to, that's kind of crystallized your own mortality sort of thing.
Yeah.
You could be fit and healthy, then something happens.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely driven more people.
I mean, this is a bit off.
Think about it.
A bit off subject, but I've seen such a lot of regret recently when I've gone out to see clients. They regret that they didn't, you know, the pandemic, the funds and investments may well have gone down, but then they recovered, and a lot of them regret not enjoying their money whilst they were younger and doing more things whilst they were younger. And now they've had COVID and perhaps don't feel so healthy. You know, the last 2 years of lockdown has impacted them and their confidence not to go on holiday now. So I've seen a lot of regret at not spending money now.
And I suppose the other trigger is the death of the first spouse and the second, or grandchildren being born. These are all times you think about the family. I think it can all be triggered with, what am I going to do to help my grandchild go to uni in 18 years' time, or whatever it may be, put a deposit on their first house. They'll struggle to buy a house if I don't help them, sort of thing. Yeah. So I think these sort of life events are all key times for thinking about it.
Do you ever, Lisa, come against any kind of resistance from people who've been gifted money, but it's been very prescriptive, then perhaps they don't want to abide by what their parent has maybe intended them to spend it on? Is there any kind of rebellion there? And how have you dealt with any situations where, you know, clients have been gifted money from their parents and then they want to go in a very different direction with that?
I've not seen it an awful lot. I do see it where people will turn around to the parents and say, I don't want that money, I can stand on my own 2 feet, and don't realise actually it's in their best interest to take that lump sum now, otherwise they'll pay tax on the estate further down the line. So you do perhaps see people not being rebellious, but just being, what's the word I'm trying to think of? The self-respect won't allow them to take it, kind of thing.
Pride,
that's it, pride, showing to the parents that they can stand on their own 2 feet and that kind of thing, when they just have to get over it, really. And often I have had to explain that to clients, that just take the money, you know, invest it. If you don't want to spend it on anything, just invest it and leave it to one side. At least it's better to have it in your account than theirs in the long term.
You can have 100% of it just now, or wait until they die and you can get 60% of it. It's that simple.
To what extent do you think trusts are going to be an important part of protecting wealth before it's formally transferred to younger adults?
I think people need to understand them a bit more, because they sound a bit complex and high net worthy, and that's just something for the multimillionaires to do. And it isn't. It's fairly mainstream. There's some very standard, simply understand trust that you can use. And it's getting over that. Yes, I would like my money to be out of my estate. Yes, I would like to reduce IHT. But yes, I'm deciding when it gets spent. And the only way you can give money away and control how it gets spent is to use a trust. And I think a lot of people, once they understand what it achieves for them, as opposed to getting caught up in all the different jargon and terminology you get about trusts, with the help of a financial advisor, should be a bit more comfortable with it. It's not just for the Duke of Westminster, a trust, it's for anybody, really.
Yeah, It's funny because if you suggest that kind of thing, like you say to like a traditional blue collar worker, you sometimes get the reaction of, well, who'd have thought that me, you know, that I could actually set up a trust. So, yeah, it does take a lot of explaining to clients at times.
Yeah. That's the skill of the advisor, turning it into something simple. Because once you're over £1 million, that's you in IHT land, or somewhere between 325 and £1 million, especially with property prices. It's quite easy to get that high quite quickly. So it's the average person pays IHT. It's not the super rich.
And to just kind of round this episode of gifting off then, I'd just like to ask each of you, intergenerational wealth and gifting, these are huge, big buzzwords. If there was one piece of advice or words of wisdom that you might have when looking to make sure that clients are gifting in the right way, or perhaps to other advisors on how to approach these issues, what maybe one tip word of wisdom might you give? So perhaps let's start with you.
Set aside the time to think about it and get organized, and you have to do that with somebody that understands what to do. So book an appointment with a financial advisor who can help you get your affairs in order, work out what you want to do, and help you achieve it.
Yeah, my tips, or the most important tip to financial advisors, would be to keep on asking the question, have you any other money? Because it's surprisingly shocking how many clients have other funds that they don't tell you about, so you're not planning properly for them. So I'd say keep at it. I see with some of the younger advisors here, they don't get enough information from the client, or perhaps a bit scared because they might be hiding away a bit of an emergency fund. You even see it with couples where one, you know, the lady might be hiding some funds from the husband and that kind of thing. So I just think it's keep on pushing and asking the question, is there any other money? Is there any other funds? Any other investments?
And at the end of the day, if you've got more than one beneficiary, the revenue is going to be your biggest beneficiary, because they're going to take 40% of your money and your two children will only get 30% each. So you have to ask your clients, who do you want to be the biggest beneficiary of your estate? The Treasury or your children? Some people are happy with the Treasury getting money, but a lot of people aren't. And that's where the financial advisor helps.